pals o' mine. This is one of those shows which answers the question, how does he do that? I was scanning the events calendar for local happenings, which included a photo exhibit of blind photographer Pete Eckert. I had to go back and read it again. Yes, a blind photographer. So how does someone who can't see take photographs? Listen in. The Society of the Blind hosted some of your pieces this past weekend, and I understand that was their first gallery hosting for the second Saturday Art Walk.
Yes, actually, at my prompting, the best way to get good flow of people in is to comply with the Art Walk. And so would you like to hear a little bit about the pieces and the show?
Absolutely.
Okay, the bulk of the pieces came from a documentary film that I'm going to be in. So the filmmakers are out of Berlin, Germany. And I chose to do a shoot I call the Forest Ballet Shoot, using ballerinas placed in a redwood forest, double exposing. This show was at Photo LA, and so this is the second time it's been viewed. There was a few other pieces there. I did a shoot for Swarovski Crystal, and at the end of the shoot, I had the models and everything lined up, so I did some stuff for myself. And that's a short shoot called Monique. And then there was one other piece, left over from a show I had in Dallas. It's nicely framed and everything, and it's large. So I had small, medium, and one large piece in this show, museum size, that's above the receptionist area.
And you were just showing me some of them in a binder. And for my listeners, it truly is in a forest setting, dark forest. And so the lit subjects, ballet dancers, almost have kind of a horror, sci-fi, genre, fantasy look to them. They're really cool. How did that even occur to you to do that?
Most of the shots, if you look at them closely, they're more like pixies, fairies,
exactly.
Sprites of the forest. But to balance the shoot, I also did some goblins. And so that's where you get into your sci-fi type thing. The idea, I've had bunches of models, but I've never directed young women before, under 21 or under 18 at least. And so I wanted to do a shoot using ballerinas. And so I split the shoot into two sections. First, I did a preliminary shoot of just ballet, described what I wanted for the girls. Their teacher came, and we worked back and forth just to establish a rapport. Those were the shots you saw that have no forest in the background. And the idea was to shoot in, not dim, but a darkened forest, so later in the day, so I could re-roll the film. This is film, not digital. Photoshop isn't accessible for the blind. Think about it if you close your eyes. And so I memorize where everything is in the forest, where the big trees are and whatnot, and take digital notes, re-roll the film, and then drop the ballerinas in, shooting in my studio.
And you had dancers at the gallery showing this weekend also.
Yeah, all the ballerinas that modeled came, and their teacher.
Oh, nice.
So yeah, that was nice.
What exactly were you diagnosed with?
Retinitis pigmentosa. Retinitis pigmentosa is, think of the retina having scar tissue, pigments that build up on the outer edges and move in over time. There's no known cure for it. There's a few things that help slow it down. Well, just keeping yourself in better health slows it down some. I lost my vision starting in September of 1983, and I became legally blind relatively quickly. And I decided that I would push my body to the best I could keep my health. And so I started into martial arts. Also, I was worried about how to make money. I had intended to go to school. RP started right at the end of undergraduate school. I had intended to go to Yale for a master's in architecture. I had been supporting myself as a carpenter and sometimes contracting too.
So what age are we talking about?
Mid-20s. And so I changed my direction and got a master's in business instead. An MBA is a good band-aid on an unknown problem. I had no idea what it was going to be like to be blind and what my ability and disability was going to be like. And so the two goals, to get a black belt and an MBA, I ran concurrently and succeeded at both.
So what was it about martial arts that appealed to you besides getting into shape physically?
I was worried how I would defend myself. Being blind, I thought, would make me very vulnerable, and I didn't want to close myself off from the world or be coddled in any way. And so I wanted to be able to support myself and my fiance, who I'm still married to 30 years later. So I had an objective of getting a black belt just as proof that I could do when I went to the school that I got the belt from, I asked the teacher to promise not to tell any of the students that I was legally blind and losing my vision until I got the black belt, because I didn't want them to treat me any different or pull any punches thinking I couldn't defend.
There are, of course, different levels of RP, and someone asked me if it was hereditary, and I was wondering the same thing.
It is. I'm called an isolate. I'm the only one in the family that has it. In earlier generations, there was a few relatives that had, quote, poor eyes, and so they may have had a milder form of it. They did not go blind. I'm the only one that had the hardship of losing all my vision.
When you mention that you're a photographer, of course, the obvious is like, what? How is that possible? But I was reading some of your bio and that you had an artistic bent before you became a photographer. I'm wondering if that was kind of an easier segue maybe into photography, because you had that pre-loss of vision, shapes and texture and touch.
Yes. My undergraduate degrees, I have one in sculpture and ceramics, another one in industrial design, both real visual. When I was a carpenter, I would talk with clients with a sketchbook and draw and just work back and forth until the idea was worked out in a thumbnail sketch. So I was very visual, like to make things and tinker with motorcycles. In graduate school, I had very little vision. The effort of trying to read, I had to take a lot of Nupren or ibuprofen just to handle the pain. But to relax my eyes, I would study for an hour and a half, and then I would shoot pellet pistols. My living room was 3 meters or 10 meters across from corner to corner. And so I'd shoot for about 20 minutes to a half hour to change the focal length to relax my eyes. I got very good at it. I shot at the top of the NRA's amateur pistol competitions. I had some cheap powder guns, black powder, and I could shoot at the range, and I usually outshot everyone that was at the range.
Now, how did you shoot pellets inside? It didn't bounce back and hit you?
Well, I'm a carpenter, so I made a box to shoot and catch the pellets.
Okay. When you meet somebody for the first time who maybe had a recent loss of sight, because I would imagine this happens more with those who have lost it at some point as opposed to those that are born without, right, because that's all they've known. Are there certain exercises or tips that you give them to just help them work it out on their own and figure out how they're going to be working with it?
First, I try to be positive. This is the best time in history to be a blind person. We have technology, we have the law, the ADA law. It's always been helper pets for the blind. But the blinded vets came back from World War II, and they had the dogs, they had the blinded vets, they had trainers. And in America, that's where guide dogs started. And so I always have shepherds. Not because of that, I just like shepherds. After that, each person adapts and recovers from going blind differently. Some people, it crushes and they never recover. It's very traumatic. It took me 2 years just to get a handle on it. Some people adapt to it well. And just because you have a certain amount of vision left, it's not similar that I'm totally blind. I can do a lot of things that some totally blind people can't. Some totally blind people can do some things that I can't do. So we all adapt to it differently. I think of it this way. If you're blind from birth, society doesn't accept us that well, so you face social barriers. If you're blinded later in life, you have to overcome the trauma of blindness. And so it's very different for everybody.
And you have two pooches right now. And what are their names?
There's Officer Clancy, but he's really not that tough, so we call him Bunny.
Okay.
And there's Hunter that I've just gotten last year.
Beautiful white.
Shepherd.
Yeah, beautiful. Don't see the white ones very often.
No, and they're being presently good. They're quiet. I've been sailing on the Gulf of Mexico with my father for the past 2 weeks. I've just gotten back midweek last week, and he had to stay with my elderly stepmother. And so, in short, he's bored out of his skull.
Well, let's talk about some of your work and where it's gone. You're in a postage stamp, I understand.
Oh, yeah. The UN has one of my larger pieces.
How were you brought to their attention?
I have no idea.
Oh, you never asked? I would have been curious.
No, I assumed it was. I'm in a show, Sight Unseen, and it's traveling worldwide, and it's getting great press. It's been traveling for about 5 years, so I assumed that's where they got it from or had some interest.
And I thought it was funny that NCIS had an episode based on you, but of course they had to change even that. TV, I just the liberty they take sometimes with situations and people that are already interesting and they really don't need to change it, but they did. How did they change it exactly?
Yeah, they made some wild assumptions. They assumed that all of my senses gotten markedly better. And so the one they chose, the guy was following his nose and took photos that involved a dead body. I do not use my nose to compose photos. I use touch and sound. Oh, the name of it is In the Dark, the name of the episode. And I believe it's episode 92. And so you can get that, you can buy it on the web. What I like is his assistant was a pretty young woman and was secretly in love with him. So at the end of the show, you know, he and the pretty girl are together. All of my male blind friends like that, you know, the blind guy gets the pretty girl at the end of the story. Usually blind people, well, they're starting to portray us in film and TV better. But in literature and in the past, there's all too many things that were portrayed as emotionally stunted, you know, not quite all there, vulnerable. I like that this was a guy that could do. And also that he gets the pretty girl at the end of the show. There's other things that are notable. In 1970, the Library of Congress Braille Library was sued by a group of men because they couldn't get Playboy. And so you can get Playboy from the Library of Congress. They've got, if you listen to all the blind books that I have, I downloaded the list and just push play to listen. And if you listen to it, there's a tendency towards self-help, religion, gardening, some cooking, and kind of like let's feel good books, a lot of novels and stuff. And so they had to be sued. Just there's really no pornography, not even light stuff like Playboy in the Library of Congress for the blind.
If you can't see the pictures and the stories, you know, erotic story, they could understand.
Yeah, they only have the text. But just a few years ago, a friend of mine, Bruce Hall, and I, with the help of a local woman, Karen Parsegian, she had some contacts with Playboy. She contacted them and they agreed to have us do photo shoots of some of their models. And so Bruce and I are the first blind people. Bruce has a little bit of sight, so he's legally blind. I'm totally blind. We're the first blind people to ever do a commercial shoot for Playboy. And so the blind really haven't taken note of it. While the first lawsuit was notable and people know about it, I haven't really heard much from blind people about, you know, the photos I've done for Playboy.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. You can still view, they have video on the cyber site. They didn't use our photos in the magazine. Not that they didn't like them. They were just downsizing so much and were so far out of the box, they didn't know what to do with them. In the contracts that I had drawn up, if they didn't do anything with them for a year, all rights reverted back to me.
Well, hopefully this will get the word out.
I did some very different shots, you know, nothing like that's ever been in Playboy or anywhere else.
So do you have any good blind jokes? I have to ask.
Not really jokes, but events. When I was teaching martial arts, my senses were really heightened. And so my wife and I had a tiff, so I went down the block to a bar, and I'm sitting there, and the guys are playing darts. And so I, you know, stick my cane in my back pocket, and I go up and say, can I play darts with you? And they said, sure. You know, the losers have to buy beer for whoever wins. I said, you know, fair enough. And so I had counted the number of steps they took going up and where they had stood. You know, I went up and just grabbed a handful of darts, three darts. And the guy said, oh, no, you got one of mine. So, I can't tell color.
Right.
And so the other guys went, and so I could, you know, get a good bearing on it. And before I went up and touched the bullseye once and came back, and I won the first set. So they bought me a beer. Then we played another set. I did mediocre, and then they didn't buy me a beer, but I had to chip in on the winners. And then one more, and I lost miserably. So that was at my third beer. Then I opened up my cane. I have a telescopic cane, and I zipped it out, and they said, what's that? And I said, oh, I'm a blind guy. And they said, no, you just won. You know, at the first game.
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, but you know, you could see after three beers, I did miserably.
That's why they call it blind drunk.
Well, apparently three pints is my dart limit. RP, when I was losing vision, and I had good central vision in a small area, I went show of Leonardo's small drawings, and it had the red walls with the little drawings and good lights. And so I came up to one of the drawings, and I can't see in the peripheral. And so while I'm there, you know, a few seconds, I feel warmth on my skin, you know, not direct touching, but, and I turn, and this woman is big eyes just staring at me like, you know, what the hell are you doing? And I said, well, I couldn't see, meaning the drawing. Or her. And there's no way to explain to somebody that your vision is good enough to see a drawing, but you couldn't see them right next to you. And so she just kind of bolts away, and I just start laughing because I realize, you know, this, there's no way I can explain this to her or anyone. And my wife sees me laughing and, you know, shyly comes up to collect me. So some of it's amusing, or at least to me.
Going back to when you were talking about vulnerability in the martial arts, I would imagine that having expensive photography equipment with you leaves you vulnerable as if you're walking down the street. How do you deal with those situations?
I used to teach black belt classes after I got my first, and I have training in other styles, Arnis, Kung Fu, Tai Chi, and extensive weapons training, pistols mostly, low fire pistol competition. So I wasn't feeling very vulnerable, but my first guide dog, his name was Uzu, he looked like a big black wolf. And so I'm a black belt, I've got the big dog, I got all the camera equipment. Uzu had his toys, and so I labeled all of my camera equipment my toys. And while the camera and everything set up, if anybody came too close or said something threatening, I would just say, Voodoo, watch my toys. Voodoo's, I was alerting him. His street name, instead of Uzu, was Voodoo, and he looks like a big black wolf. And if he looked at you, his eyes would glow green and dim light. He was intimidating. Well, I'd also trained him some. He would come to my black belt classes, and he knew about kicks and punches, so he could evade anybody trying to hurt him. He also knew, trained with police and military, too, and so he knew about guns. He would pull on my cuff. I usually wore white shirts to let me know that he had seen a gun. And rifles, he knew enough if somebody wasn't aiming it at him, but if they held the rifle on a diagonal or, you know, not pointing at him, he would lunge and take it from them. I wasn't that worried because I had him.
I was just thinking about people that are out there that are blind and are afraid to go out in the streets because they personally are afraid for their safety. So I just wanted to let them know that there are options out there.
All of that I said sounds very negative, and it's a bad view of the world. How did the skills translate? Instead of bopping people in the nose, the echolocation skills I learned, I translated into using the camera. And when I stopped shooting powder guns, I used all the skills learned shooting directly translate into holding a camera. You can frame pictures by sound just as you do. When I shot, I had limited vision. I had tunnel vision. So now I was translating those skills to something safer, taking photos. I like doing things that are positive. Instead of sitting down crying about what you've lost, try to take what you've got and make something good out of it.
As I say, even just walking down the street, there are people that are afraid to now leave their front door because they're afraid they might be attacked or mugged. And those are with sight. And if someone now feels even more vulnerable because they can't see.
Well, remember that I prepared for blindness. I had the luxury of diminishing vision for maybe 10 years.
Well, that's why I bring it up. Because if you have been diagnosed, and you have time to prepare, whatever time that may be, that there are resources and there are other people that experience something similar, and there's tips that you can share.
I was in Connecticut when I was losing my vision. I graduated from San Francisco State, asked my wife to marry me, but in Connecticut, I wanted to go to graduate school. And the Connecticut State Services for the Blind, you know, helped set up to go through graduate school.
Now, you had mentioned that you worked in construction, you worked with your hands with wood in addition to sculpting. Are you still able to work with wood in some respect?
Oh, more than some. I'm slower. It takes me about four times as long for me to do things. I'll show you in the backyard. I put an addition on my studio. I built a large screened-in porch. When I had a little bit of vision, I used to babysit my sister's son. He was a toddler, still in diapers. So I built a little fishing boat just big enough for a man and a tiny boy. And it fit in the back of my pickup truck that I had. Totally blind, I decided I'd like to learn how to turn on the lathe. And so I got a jet mini lathe, and I turned mostly bowls, but I taught myself how to make hardwood clock gears. And I was looking for something to do to make money. I can make beautiful clock gears circa like 1750, 1800s, but I'm so slow at it that it's not cost effective. I'd have to sell them for an enormous amount of money to make a profit. So I can still work in wood. I made like bowls and lidded jars and things like that. My wife has most of them. The little fishing boat's still out in my studio. So it's mostly, I'm better than your average homeowner in woodworking. When I make mistakes, they're usually catastrophic. I don't get hurt. I had to come up with safe ways of using all the power tools.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. What type of saws you use?
Oh, at Sears you can get a 2-foot fence that fits on a skill saw, so I use that. I have a table saw, I have a lathe, I've got a few routers. I came up with a method to cut gears with the router. Standard tools, jigsaws, electric miter box, got a compressor, and nail guns. Setting screws, I'm not too bad screwing down something, but screwing something up in the air or at an angle, I'm not so great with a hammer. So I prefer screws and nail guns to hammers now.
So what method did you create to work with a saw or a nail gun, for that matter?
Oh, the nail gun's easy.
Because it's more of a target. But yeah. What about a saw, though, and like a jigsaw?
The router, for instance. I mounted the router upside down in a little table that I made and built an armature with a brass pin that sits just above the router. And I can take a gear, any kind of gear, not tiny ones, not like from out of a watch, but from a clock, and bolt it to a blank gear face and then bring it up, and the router will cut the wood and the actual gear will run on the pin as a template. And the whole time, the armature that I've built ensures that your fingers never even get close to the spinning blade. I like to retrofit and adapt, like all my cameras. I have one 1950s, 1960s. The newest one I have is like 1990 or so. The 4x5 camera, it's not that old, but it's technology from the teens, you know, like from 100 years ago.
Nice.
And so those large cameras all have braille all over them. I've filed notches into the rails. I can hear distances, like I can estimate the distance between you and I. And then the filed notches on the rails, I stick my fingernail in the proper notch and back the rail back down to focus properly. So coming up with little tricks to adapt sighted tools for blindness is fun for me. I remember one of my degrees is industrial design, so this is just reverse engineering.
Is anybody selling something similar to that for the blind?
No.
Have you considered getting something out there? I mean, you couldn't really mass produce them on a large scale, but...
During the 70s, I think it was Nikon, did a commercial with Stevie Wonder taking photos, and it was kind of tongue-in-cheek. They weren't good photos, and you know, he had like Ray Charles singing, but the microphone was turned the wrong way,
yeah.
And I didn't like it. It's derogatory towards blind people. So I approached Canon to do a remake, you know, use that idea, have blind people doing photo shoots, but have good photos. I have a small group I call the Blind Photographers Guild. There's only three of us. We would do photos that were, you know, museum quality instead of we can't do it type of stuff.
So you're currently working on the Forest Ballet, which we were talking about earlier.
Actually, the Forest Ballet shoot is done. And that was for the documentary that they're still editing. But I learned a lot in the shoot, and so now I'm doing the psychologically dark side of the forest. This is the Goblin shoot. Again, with the Redwood Forest, but I'm going to standard old-fashioned film, color film. If you push it very far, the film starts to freak out, called reciprocity failure.
What do you mean you say you push it?
It's meant to be shot, used within standard time length, you know, the settings of the camera, and it can be pushed a little bit further in either direction. But when you take it and you start shooting in minutes instead of seconds, it's really not designed for that. And so you can get surreal effects. I'm making this shoot even more complicated than the last. I like challenges. And so I'm going to shoot the sky and the canopy of the Redwood Forest, and it will come out looking normal. But then I'm going to use reciprocity failure to make the colors really get surreal. And then after that, I'm going to re-roll the film and then my studio drop in goblins. Very labor-intensive, easy to crash and burn, like not succeed. But if I succeed, they'll be very good.
I'm guessing you have people telling you what it looks like, giving you a visual? Or
after they're done. I'm very clear about the event is all me, and there's no sighted people helping or anything because they would taint the view of the blind, you know, what I see in my mind's eye.
Well, I just wondered if you had something in your mind beforehand, and if you maybe just asked somebody if it looks the way that you were hoping the outcome to be, if you were...
You're almost there. I memorize everything I'm doing. I preconceive what I want. I memorize the event while I'm taking the photo, and then while the event is still fresh in my mind, I do contacts and then have sighted people describe what they see. If I had lots of money, I could just print everything, but I like big prints, so I compare their description of the photo to my memory of what I've done, and then I pick the ones I'm going to print. I could completely eliminate sighted people from my process, take the photos, do an essay on the event, and then do a contact with everything I've shot, and that would be one complete body, completely eliminating sighted people until I showed them in a gallery.
So the documentary, do you know what the release date is? Or
it's going to be on French and German TV. There's been some mention of bringing my wife and I to Berlin to see the premiere of the film. I don't know if it's going to be released in the States. I think they're going to bring it to documentary film, like competitions and things. So it might be at Sundance or something like that. It's in editing now. They don't have a hard deadline, but they do have agreements that it will be shown on German TV and some French TV too. It'll be this year, probably in the next 6 months. You know, they've given me a rough guess.
So what's next for you?
I was just at Photo LA at mid-January, and some film directors took interest in my work. And one of them owns a vineyard that has a redwood grove on it, and he's agreed or offered to let me, my wife and I, come up and the two dogs. And he's got a nice house and staff and all that, so my wife's going to have a good time. I plan to camp because I want to be in the forest, and you know, I can shoot in the dark, so I don't need lights or anything like that. Wandering around in the dark in the forest is, I have a braille compass, and the dogs do help because it's not total darkness.
Explain to me what a braille compass is. How does it work, I guess, is what I should ask.
The one I have is a standard military compass, but it's been, the top is replaced with a disc made out of aluminum, and it has presumably a magnet in it to point to the right direction. And it's got raised braille letters on it and a line for which direction is north.
And how many different situations have you used that?
I use it every day. Whenever I get lost, or, you know, sometimes if I'm not thinking, if I'm preoccupied, I might get turned about. I don't usually count streets. I just go off sound. But if I get preoccupied thinking about something else, you know, photography, whatever, I like to cook too. Sometimes I'm just coming up with recipes. I use the braille compass to reorient myself.
What have you heard over and over again, misconceptions about the blind, that you would like to just tell the world?
It's a very slippery slope, people's opinions. Once I was out in the park training Uzu, and somebody came up to me and said, "Oh, that is just amazing. You know, the blind person that gets that dog is just going to be so grateful to you." And I said, "Oh, no, I'm blind." And she's going, "Oh, isn't it great that they gave you that trained dog?" She just saw me training the dog. So her opinion slipped from how great I was to how helpless I was. Like I couldn't eat a bowl of peas with a spoon. Now when somebody asks me, "Are you training the dog?" I say, "Yes." I used to run with Uzu just on a leash and use my cane, mostly to block, but, you know, I wanted people to know as I'm wending my way through crowds that there was some vision thing going on. And I was running him, top safe speed was about 9 miles an hour. If you go above 9 and the dog cuts in front of you with four legs, you can't turn as fast, so you go over the top. Our top speed was probably about 15 miles an hour. Uzu could run 35 miles an hour, but that's way past what I can do. So I was running the dog, and some man stopped me and said, "You are doing a disservice to the blind person that gets that dog." And I let him get real deep into it. He was a head guide dog trainer at some school. And I said, "You know, it's really good you ran into me, because this is my dog and I'm totally blind. And now, instead of looking at the least blind people can do, you might think about the most they could do and train towards that instead of trying to minimize and play safe all the time." He apologized and said he had put both his feet in his mouth, and I said, "Yes, he did, sir."
"That is correct, sir."
I said, "Very pleased to meet you. I do assure you that I'm totally blind, and what you saw is working well with the dog." Biggest thing blind people face is the misconceptions and the assumptions of the sighted.
Do you think that's because that's what we're told when we're younger? And we maybe haven't personally known any blind people, so we just take it
some of that
face value, whatever we're told?
It's hard to work around because everybody has different assumptions. What I have noticed, the further back in the generations you go, the worse the assumptions are. You know, like a five-year-old, I was in Toys R Us buying things for my niece and nephew, and this little five-year-old was running by, and I assume he was five. No one was with him, and he grabbed my cane and said, "What's this?" And I said, "Well, I'm a blind person, and I use this like a cat uses its whiskers to find its way around."
Nice.
And he just said, "Oh."
Yeah.
Perfectly logical, and he ran away, perfectly satisfied.
Yeah.
But quite often, well, these TSAs, they assume that they'll grab you and drag you, which is illegal, by the way. You know, because I'm blind, they assume I have no sense of communication. Like, they don't use words to communicate. And I got in trouble because one of them did that, and I blocked his hands. And my wife said, "You just hit that guy." And I said, "No, it's illegal to grab people, and I was just taking his hands off of me." It's assumptions that are the most difficult and the hardest to adapt to. I have no simple way of overcoming that.
Well, actually, you do by your photography.
The photography, somebody asked me about civil rights. I have strong feelings about civil rights for the blind in general, but with my photography, I described my work as a gloved fist. And they went, ooh, you know, what do you mean? And I said, all I have to do is succeed. And it's proof that blind people can do more than you assume we can't. And hopefully it makes people think, what about that other disabled guy down the street? You know, what about disabled people in general? We'll get more opportunity. Blind people in California here are greatly underemployed. And the ones that are totally blind, we're probably 95% unemployed. And we don't have to be. We have lots of abilities. We tend to be well educated because the schools can't block us out. Please employ some disabled people. Doesn't have to be blind. Just give us some opportunity.
Well, for my listeners, what are some examples of work that they can perform that may not be obvious to those that do not have disabilities or challenges?
Well, I was a martial arts instructor.
And there's software that you can scan.
Oh, yeah, there's talking scanners. The iPhone has been described as the greatest tool for the blind since Braille. All these apps and things. Better for visually impaired people, but it's starting to get better for totally blind people. And I don't have one presently. That's my next purchase. So they're expensive. But like I said earlier at the beginning of our conversation, this is the best time in history to be a blind person because of technology and the law, guide dogs, and we're being better accepted than I think at any time in history, even though there's some barriers still. I've got one little thing I should add. People assume that your other senses get stronger. It's not quite that way. Think of how much brain capacity or attention you have. When you take one of the senses out, it just has more brain to rewire for those other senses. But when I was trying to teach my black belt students, all, you know, very powerful, smart men, it was difficult, and I realized that their vision was actually masking the potential of the other senses. And so while they could learn rudimentary skills of blindness, they couldn't access more power using their optic cortex rewired from the other senses to maximize capacity. So instead of viewing myself as visually impaired, I view myself as sound and touch enhanced, because I'm accessing the world at a different plane than you're able to, I assume, because what I've guessed is just out of that experience. I just don't want to sit down and cry unless and let life pass me by. So I'm willing to take on heavy stakes to gain some success.
Well, you've clearly accomplished, and it'll be...
The goblin shoot I described to you, I have one shot, it's on my website, called Cathedral, and I'm working on a letter to Pope Francis, and I want to send that via a friend that has heavy-duty Catholic connections. I don't want it to be stuffed in some archive. I want it to be hung. And so I'm trying to pull threads to make sure that the Pope actually reads my letter, and I think he's good about these things, and that it actually gets hung. The thing that's slowing me down is the letter itself. What can I say that is profound enough to hand to a Pope? And I like this Pope very much. He's
more of the people.
Yes, but he used to be a bouncer in a bar.
There you go. Yeah.
By the way, Pete told me that he would love to have one of his photos used for a slasher movie poster. Seriously. So if you know someone, do something different. Create a toy library in your community.